Between 2017 and 2021, more than 5,600 migrant families were separated at the U.S. southern border under the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy. The policy ended amidst public outrage. And during his second week in office, President Biden signed an executive order establishing a family reunification task force.
We're going to work to undo the moral and national shame of the previous administration that literally, not figuratively, ripped children from the arms of their families, their mothers and fathers at the border, and with no plan, none whatsoever, to reunify the children who are still in custody and their parents.
A year and a half into Biden's presidency, there are still some families separated from one another. Caitlin Dickerson is staff writer at The Atlantic, and her latest investigative piece, The Secret History of Family Separation, is a sweeping, nearly 30,000-word piece chronicling the scope of family separation border policy. Caitlin, thanks so much for being here today on The Takeaway.
Thank you for having me.
Let's just start with the most immediate. How many families remain separated as a result of the Trump-era zero-tolerance policy?
So the number of families that remain separated today is somewhere between 700 and 1,000, according to government records. That overall 5,000-plus number speaks to the entirety of the Trump administration. Some of those separations happened under zero tolerance, which started in the summer of 2018. Some of them happened prior, in pilot programs that originally began kind of in secret. The country didn't know that they were going on. And part of the issue with reunifying these families today is that record keeping was really shockingly bad, in some cases just non-existent at all. Some separations weren't documented anywhere. And so that's why you have so many families that still, according to government records, haven't been brought back together. That number 700 to 1,000 is really large. And it is thought that some of those families have found ways to reunite with each other and not alerted the federal government to that, kind of understandably not wanting to deal with the U.S. government anymore. But there are more than 150 children who, to this day, the parents from whom they were separated still have not even been located by the American government. We just don't know where they are.
We talk about this as a Trump-era policy. Certainly there was public outrage at some of the images that resulted from important reporting during that time. But you also help us to understand that the Trump administration is not the first or last presidency or political administration to separate families at the border.
That's right. I mean, this family separation that occurred under President Trump was an escalation of an approach to border enforcement known as prevention by deterrence, which really came out of 9/11. And it was when the Department of Homeland Security decided to try implementing what they call consequences, which means prosecution, against people crossing the border in order to discourage them from doing so. So this typically dealt with individual adults and often individual adult men who were migrant laborers coming from Mexico in its early phases. And then under Trump, of course, expanded to families. Prior to the Trump administration, families were separated occasionally, including under the Obama administration. That fell entirely outside of federal policy, unless it was done with the explicit purpose for child safety, to protect a child who was thought to be crossing the border with somebody who was a threat to them. Maybe they weren't the real parent. Maybe they were the real parent, but were facing very serious criminal charges, kind of unrelated to crossing the border and requesting asylum with their child. Even though it did happen, though, I should point out the numbers were far, far, far lower than they had been under Trump. And those numbers, we really have never seen anything like it.
For one moment, let's put aside the moral, the ethical, the humane. From a pure policy perspective, did these consequences work to reduce the number of migrants arriving at the southern border?
They don't work. And economists and other researchers who've looked at this issue for a very long time have pointed out that, you know, the main factors that influence immigration are much bigger long-term trends. You know, the economic circumstances in the countries that people are fleeing from, as well as the economic circumstances here, which is why, you know, migration dropped really dramatically, for example, during and after the 2008 recession because there was very little work available. And then, of course, also the longer term trends around public safety and whether people feel like their families are, you know, safe in their homes on a day-to-day basis. There is some research that shows on a very granular level, you know, and on an individual level, consequences can be effective in that, you know, if you, Melissa, were caught crossing the border illegally and you were prosecuted for doing so, your personal likelihood of trying to do so again may go down, but it's just nowhere near on the scale in terms of effectiveness as, again, you know, looking at these economic considerations and the public safety considerations and whether people feel like they're safe on a daily basis.
In your piece, you really delve into what family separation looked like, felt like, was experienced like. Are there stories, maybe one that sticks out for you from your reporting?
There are. That was really important to me to describe the separations themselves, because for years we've only had the side of the story of the children and families who were involved. And it was really impossible to get anybody from the Border Patrol to go on the record and talk about it. But I met a woman named Nerys Gonzalez, who is a Salvadoran consular worker. She's one of the few people who are outside of, you know, the federal government officials who were allowed to be in these detention centers when separations took place. And she's really still traumatized by what she saw. You know, she described walking into the facility on the first day that separations were taking place and seeing a sea of crying and screaming children and families who were all kind of being pulled on at the same time. She said that she would literally see kids where you'd have a parent holding onto one arm and pulling, and then a Border Patrol agent pulling onto the other arm, you know, so hard that she worried these kids were actually getting hurt. And, you know, parents wanted to fight back, and these scenes were escalating. So there were times when she was actually asked by Border Patrol agents, you know, as a native Spanish speaker, as someone from El Salvador, to actually intervene and put herself physically between agents and parents to try to calm them down and explain the situation to them, which of course felt horrible to her, but she thought that in that moment she was so out of control of what was going on that at the very least what she wanted to do was prevent any of these children or parents from getting physically injured on top of the, you know, emotional trauma that they were enduring. You know, once the parents were gone, she said that kids would surround her, you know, just grab onto her arms, her legs, her belt loops, just beg her for information, beg her not to leave at the end of the day because they were so confused. You know, more than anything, they just wanted to know where their parents were.
Looking ahead, what is the likely future of family separation policy at our border?
So there's nothing right now that prevents family separation from being implemented again tomorrow, certainly in a future Trump administration, if one exists. President Trump push to re-implement family separations, you know, really immediately after he released an executive order ending them under political pressure he was facing from both Democrats and Republicans. But it was something that he lamented for the rest of his presidency and that he tried to convince people to go along with once again. And I think, you know, maybe more important than that one person and his views on family separation are the views of dozens of, you know, career border enforcement officials I interviewed who told me they felt that it was successful. They still believe in the idea. They would say, you know, we would have really seen the success if we had just left it in place a couple weeks longer. You know, if we just held on for a little bit more time, it would have made a difference. You know, they believe so strongly in the effectiveness of deterrence and increasing the severity of deterrence alongside the increasing border crossings, despite, again, years of research calling those conclusions into question. So, you know, Congress has done nothing to outlaw a future family separation policy. At one point, there was a lot of enthusiasm and momentum around outlawing the practice. That seems to have disappeared. And so, again, there's just nothing to prevent this from coming back. And still a lot of people working in border enforcement who believe it's a good idea.
Caitlin Dickerson is a staff writer at The Atlantic. You can read her latest investigative piece, The Secret History of Family Separation, now. Caitlin, thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.